Get ready to take off with Dynamic Golf. Welcome back, Dynamic Golf listeners. I'm your co-host, Tim McElvanna, and with me today is my fellow co-host, Sean Klotz. Today, we're going to talk about an exciting conversation, the 2025 PGA Show.
Hey, Dynamic Golf listeners. Really good to hear your voice, T-Mac, and just got back from the cold state of Florida. I don't know what happened last week. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, 49 of a high on Wednesday, and my daughters they're up in Tallahassee and there's snow. What's happening?
Yeah, you know? I heard about that. There was some snow up there and a good amount too, like a couple inches or something like that. Like I heard
4 to 5 inches. It's unbelievable. And just so weird, you know, living in Tampa for 35 years and you're from your native, and you know, it's just such a weird thing that doesn't happen in our world.
The old saying is around here, and I'm sure you've heard this around Old Silverado, if it gets any colder, we're going to move to Florida. And that was definitely the theory that last week for sure.
Yeah, no question. So it was probably the weirdest, you know, weather-wise demo day and PGA show that I've literally ever attended. I was trying to talk to some of my members when I got back, and you know, they're like, "How long have you been going?" I'm like, "You know, I don't really know if I know that answer. I'm going to say at least 1998 would probably have been my first one."
Wow.
And I don't think I've missed a year since, because it's and you've been, T-Mac. I know you had some family and some weather issues that you had to kind of deal with this week instead of being able to go. But you know, it's a meeting place for just fellow PGA professionals. That's the kind of first thing. It is a way for the vendors to be able to show their new lines and show their new product. Mm-hmm. So that gets, you know, the public, and that's what I think we should talk quite a bit about today, is really kind of like, you know, the guy who's sitting on the couch, the girl who's trying to get out and play this summer or this spring or whatever, like what do we kind of see? What are the new products? What are the new things that are, you know, for the public to kind of get excited about, because it is kind of an insider show.
Yeah, it's like a little, it's like a toy story for you know, grown golfers, right? A lot of new hot topics, new technology. It's just, and you're right, it's a really cool place to kind of recharge your batteries for the PGA. You're meeting new people, and just having that social interaction just gets you, you know, mentally, you know, you're just mentally charged up. You know, you're like, I'm ready to go be a PGA professional. And it's just, it's a great way to get together. You're right.
It's so true. And it's also my first year I've ever done it from being up north and not working. Like, it's our kind of, you know, downtime up here, obviously. Yeah. Whereas, you know, me and you have been doing PGA shows in the state of Florida, like, you know, in the middle of our season in January.
Yes.
For, you know, 15, 20 years. So it's just such a different kind of take on it. So it was different. We were able to kind of get a lot more accomplished than we normally can being in Florida. Because, again, and I talked to a couple of my fellow pros from the Tampa area that I saw over there. Saw Eric over at River Hills and Duke Bowen. Duke Bowen's an old school guy that I used to know from the Heritage Isles days. And, you know, they can only spend a day over there because we got to get back to your club. Your club is busy.
Correct.
You know,
and I think it's a great dynamic. What you're talking about is that from the northern side, you know, being up there, you've got plenty of time. You've got the whole week to basically be there, kind of peruse around and cruise, you know, being, you know, for me, I wasn't able to attend the show this year. I had a kind of a busy schedule
and stuff. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I had a busy schedule, right. Which is good. You know, it's always great to hear. Yep. I'd love to have gotten on over there, but, you know, it's a different time. You know, it's our season. A lot of people are expecting lessons, golf, stuff like that, and when the weather gets kind of bad like it was, and being in an indoor simulator, I get a little bit busier because people are like, well, I can't go out and hit. So it you know, for us, it's if you can get over for a half day or a day, that's a big accomplishment for, you know, pros and assistants here in this area for sure.
That's it absolutely. So yeah, it started off with a demo day on Tuesday, and that's usually a super fun time, you know, really kind of a good way to kind of, and it's changed throughout the years too, because of multiple reasons, but the clubs, the golf companies, they don't have such a presence as they used to.
Were there any companies there that you didn't see? Was TaylorMade, were all the big guys TaylorMade, Callaway, or was there anybody that you kind of saw missing out of the unit?
Yeah, I don't think TaylorMade was there. Now, granted, let me preface this with the fact that it was a morning, especially was a 51 degree pouring rain most of that morning,
Yeah, it was
you know, kind of
disgusting.
intermittent. Yeah.
It was
So
disgusting.
it was awful. It was. So I mean, we got there, whatever, right around 9, you know, parked super close, super easy to get in, which again, you know, from again, some of our listeners, just kind of a good insight onto the kind of how these trade shows work. That doesn't happen. That's normally like an hour kind of process of parking, right? Trying to get in. So anyway, so we got in and we were there right around 9, and you know, it's raining. It's not super fun. It's cold. The vendors aren't thrilled. They're not into it. But we did see kind of, we stopped off at the Cleveland. One of my guys with me wanted to try some new wedges, and it's just a great place to be able to try all the different wedges and grinds and different things. So we stopped off and saw some Cleveland product. They've got a new wedge. I you know, hit a couple 62 degrees and 64 degree clubs that you don't normally get to hit, which, you know, same thing like we told the high school kids, you may not want to have that in your bag unless you kind of know how to do it, type of thing.
Correct, correct.
Yep.
But the other thing
But
is
they,
when you're with those guys, Sean, you learn a lot about the product
yeah,
and you learn
that's
a
exactly.
you know, you learn something new, not just about the
Yep.
product, but how the product is used, right? You know, like
Yep.
you kind of go, oh, I didn't know you're supposed to kind of do that with a wedge or a driver or something. You just get a little bit more
Sure.
knowledge, and it's not, groundbreaking, but for professionals like us, it just gives us a little bit more of a crack into the window behind the scenes. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you said that. And part of the cool thing of our podcast team, Matt, is we don't talk a lot before. We don't have notes. We don't have a script. We just kind of go, and that's the way we
Shoot from
want
the
it to
hip.
be, you know. And you're leading right into something that we're going to talk about here in the next couple minutes. But the Cleveland stuff, just real quick, because to your point of like, you know, we think we are the industry experts, we are the professionals, we get it. But I never knew, didn't know, whatever you want to call it, that the black finish on a club, on a wedge, right? So you typically with wedges, some of the companies either have like the standard and like satin chrome, we'll call it. Then you've got like this rusty raw tour grind finish,
Yep, the rusty.
and then you've got the yep, and then you got the kind of the black dollar finish. So I was always under the impression that the raw tour grind, the rusty one, would spin more. And the Cleveland reps said, nope, that doesn't happen anymore. It's the same amount of spin rate as a chrome or as a raw tour grind or a black.
Really?
And I thought that was interesting, right? Like that's not something I knew before walking in the door.
Well, that's what I
They
mean.
said it.
You remember the old saying, the old trusty rusty, right? You'd get that old rusty thing and you thought it just spun like crazy, but that's amazing that they're getting down to the science of that now.
And then the other thing is like the black, you know, again, some people like the black dollar finish on their wedges. They're like Cleveland's making a concerted effort, and they said like the black won't go away now. Like it won't become kind of that, you know, whiter brown. So then you get kind of two colors in your wedge. They really made a concerted effort to make sure that that finish is staying there throughout your life of your wedge.
Okay, that's
So,
great. Now,
you
did
know.
he kind of explain why? I know why I like the black finish, but did he kind of explain why some of the people are gravitating towards that color?
You know, probably same reason as you. Just it's just a aesthetic looking type of feel. Do you like to, you know, not to maybe reflect the sun a little bit, or not to look back at it? Is that kind of your reasoning, or?
I've always had a problem with when I get into the bunker looking at that high shiny finish, it distracts me. So when I get that dull finish, I don't, you know, it's just it the contrast against the sand, it just makes it easier for me. But I've always been one of those people, the bright shiny thing, you know, shiny things attract me and I get distracted very easily.
You're like Dory. You're like Dory in Little Nemo,
Exactly. About the same
right?
memory pattern too.
Exactly. No, it's great. So you know, just that one interaction right there was kind of worth the price of admission. But from there, we kind of started walking over to a couple of other vendors, and again, the size of it was smaller, the number of vendors was smaller, the number of attendees was smaller. All weather related. It has to be weather related because it was just such a dreary day in Florida. But we were able to kind of, and my buddy's looking for wedges, so I'm like, hey, let's go look at the Vokies. And we just kind of wanted to see what their product was. They usually have a nice kind of a bigger chipping area than some of the other companies have access to. And it's actually, you know, a little more playable because some of the, even at Cleveland, you're chipping off of tight grass, going to a downhill green and you're like, boy, it's really not spinning or checking. Well, if you go to the other side of the green, it might check better.
Correct. Did they have you guys over, did they have the little demo thing over there in that little tiny putting green behind the pavilion or whatever it is? Is that where you guys
Yeah,
were?
so we didn't make it to that corner. We kind of got came in from the other side, and it was, again, we didn't really, we probably saw a third of this demo day, because we just, it was, we selfishly, we did go play golf at 1 o'clock, and
You
we had
guys
that going.
did.
So
God bless
yeah,
you.
we did get some golf in. That's another story, but basically the golf was perfect. It was the only time it did not rain on Tuesday, was between 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. So literally
Great.
perfect. Couldn't have worked out any better. But so we make our way over to the Titleist area, and you kind of see a little crowd over there, and you're kind of like, what's going on? And you kind of know maybe there's somebody over there. So it's Brad
Oh, wow.
Faxon, who is, I don't know, I didn't know how many times he's won on PGA Tour, but just known as a short game, not guru, but just such a great short game player, one of the best putters that probably has ever played on the PGA Tour. That's not overstating that,
And
and
Rory
great wedge
McIlroy's
player.
putting coach, right?
Oh yeah, didn't even put that together.
I mean, that's, I mean, I watch all his videos when he's working with Rory all the time. So, yeah, that's not that. I mean,
Interesting.
Brad Faxon is a great coach for that. So you're right on that.
Yeah, so that's again the kind of thing that you get to at the PGA show, at the demo days. You get this access that you don't get on a normal basis. And Faxon's a Rhode Island guy, so that's a big thing to my head pro, who's, Massachusetts guy, and being from Peabody and Boston originally, so I knew Faxon kind of growing up. You always kind of followed his career. But the thing about, it's such a, high level type of conversation. Like, the thing about tour players or people that are at that level, they just have such a great understanding of all the intricacies of all the game part of it. They're just on such a different level. And you kind of wonder, as a 15 handicap player listening to this top podcast, like, well, that's great. How does it help me? They did such a great job of, like, I'm going to use the word, like, dumbing it down, even to, all of us who are kind of PGA professionals watching this thing, of the difference of, there's 27 different wedges that Titleist makes. 27 different wedges that
I did
Titleist
not
makes.
know
So,
that. Holy cow.
right. Yeah. And the guy with him was the tour fitting wedge guy out on tour. So he's working with Adam Scott. He's working with, just, I mean, all the tour players.
Wow, to hang out in that van for a day. I bet you see some amazing people. Wow.
So, again, it's a little bit like, my boss has a great saying, that he's like, look, I don't need to know how the car works. I just need to be able to drive the car. Like, that's such a good saying in golf in general. Like, and Faxon's got the, he understands the mechanics of how to drive the car, but he also just knows how to drive the car. Meaning, like, he was still kind of questioning the tour representative of, like, okay, so what? I've got four different grinds in a 54 degree. I've got an F, a D, an X, and a Y, or S and a Y. Why is the F grind going to serve me better than the D grind? Or what, like those types of conversations. And so there's that component. Then there's a, okay, what's the bounce? What bounce should I always hit? Which is a really good, I think it's just such a misunderstood. And I definitely learned a lot that day, that for that 45 minutes, of what bounce you should hit. And I think the best way to simplify it for our listeners is that you essentially, on a 50, so this tour rep, I think his name was Aaron, he calls sand wedges 54, 55, and 56 degrees. Those are sand wedges. And then he calls lob wedges 58, 60, 62, 64. So the simplification of it for the listener is, if you're hitting a 54, 55, or 56 degree wedge, in general, in, again, there's a ton of different factors, you should look for a club that has more bounce, 10, 12, even up to 14 degrees of bounce on your wedge.
Does the turf have
And
anything to do with that at all? Is that
100%, yeah, turf interaction, kind of how you come into it, steep or inside out. They were talking about, they even kind of got into some TrackMan numbers, like, is your path inside out? Well, if your path is more inside out, you want to have more bounce, less bounce, whatever the thing is. But to kind of narrow it down for the listeners, Sand wedges, you want to have more bounce. So at least look at 10 and maybe 12, but probably 10 is, and Nate said this too, like 10 is the more versatile bounce
Okay.
for the majority of conditions, the bunker being different, I know, whatever. So 54, 56 degree 10. And then if you get to a 60 degree club, you have a lob wedge, that's the club you want less bounce in. You want to have 4, 6, or maybe 8 degrees of bounce, again, sort of depending on how you come into it. I think that should just help our listeners in general. Like, okay, now I've got a clue, and then and then the grind is like the grind is, and it's like it's either a kind of a bigger sole or a narrower sole, for lack of better terms.
Correct.
Faxon was just saying, like, look, he picked up a club. He's like, I don't like the look of that, and the guy Aaron said, don't pick it up then. Like, if you don't like the look of it, automatically, don't try to manipulate it and make it work for you. You gotta like the look of how it sits on the ground to benefit you. So we could do 2 hours on bounce and grind and wedges, and let's just make it simple for the listener. Sand wedges, more bounce. Lob wedges, less bounce. And then my last thing I'll lead with, which I don't think you do this better than I do in general, and again, it's a little bit because of where I grew up, but Faxon's main leading statement was he wants less air, more roll, period. And we've talked about that before as far as, well, how we teach people. It's so much safer to hit something on the ground than it is to try to carry it to a target. Do you see that in your teaching, right? You see that in the people you play with?
Absolutely. It's so much tougher to control. Once the ball gets up in the air, it's so much tougher to control that and determine where it's going to land and how it's going to react compared to on the ground. You've got a much more stable reaction with the ground. You get more interaction. You know what's going to happen 9 times out of 10, right? But we see on tour everybody's throwing it up high and soft, and we think we can do that, and it's just not practical for the amateur.
So, and he addressed that too. Like, he basically said that, like, because they made him hit a 58 degree flop shot, and he hated it. He's like, he goes, you better watch out, like, people on the side, because I don't hit the shot too often, right? And of course, he executed it within, 8 feet of the flag, and it was high and floppy. But the kind of takeaway from it was he took that same 58 degree club, and I wish we had some, this is maybe where we can do some YouTube stuff in the future. He hit that club so low, it was coming out so low, and it would do the bounce, bounce, check type of stuff. But it would be probably a 30-yard golf shot in general from where he was to where the flag was, maybe 25 to 30 yards. But his first bounce was probably around 7 or 8 yards off the, from where he was at, and then it rolled out the rest of the, 18 feet type of thing. Yeah, sorry, 18 yards. It was like, again, Scott and I were looking at each other, and you're just like, wow, we don't hit that shot. Like, how do you even hit that shot?
Yeah,
How do
because
you
I
even
mean,
do
I'd
that?
probably be hitting like it with if it's 7 yards with 18 yards of roll, I'm probably hitting like a nine or a pitching wedge, something that's a little bit that's amazing. That's just great hands.
Correct. So that was, I mean, that was just one part. I'm just at Tuesday. I'm at Tuesday morning of 10 o'clock before I even, we're talking about this thing. So it was great. We did, we're going to put the video that I made for that on our YouTube account. So I think that'd be a good way for people to kind of check it out and follow
Absolutely.
of the facts and thing. I think that was, I think I was telling you, we got already 1,000 views on our Instagram page and stuff. So it's just a, and it was, whatever, 2 minutes long. I could have taped the half an hour of it type of thing. Just so many good details in there.
But the thing I really like about what you're saying is how much, and I think some of our amateurs could kind of learn from this, but he really asks a lot of good questions though. I mean, he's digging into it. He's trying to figure out what's going to be best for his game. And I like that, for a guy like him, he's really thinking about what are all the options I have? What do I like? And not just what's going to be best for him, but also what's, aesthetically appeasing for him too.
100%, 100%, definitely. So that was just the first part, and then the next part I'll tell you just real quick about the demo day thing was, so literally walk 10 steps over inside in a tent. We kind of went there because it was starting to rain. Stacy Lewis, who was the Solheim Cup captain, she was given a speech or a talk and being interviewed by Laura from, I don't remember Laura's last name, from the Golf Channel. got interviewed by her, and I've got some video of that too, T-Mac. I think we should post that on our YouTube
Oh,
channel as
that'd be
well.
great. That's a good wealth of knowledge too, right there.
So good. Just kind of some of the takeaways there were, like, how did you get asked to do the Solheim Cup? Like, what was your responsibilities as a captain? Who, where'd you put your emphasis? How'd you get your team to stay together? So I think that'd be really good for, people that might be interested in that to kind of go listen to that and watch that. And then she talked about branding. She talked about how to brand herself as a PGA player, how important it is to, great to have the abilities and stuff, but you have to kind of make yourself different and separate yourself from other players on tour. And how does that happen? She's a mom, I guess. So she kind of talked about playing on tour as being a mom and how the responsibility of that goes. So, great, just unbelievable. And she's so well spoken and just, very easy to talk to, it seemed like. So that was a cool, another half hour.
That's great. And I think that's kind of comes back to what we talked about with branding is that as PGA professionals, we're not just trying to sell you a swing. We're trying to sell ourselves, right? We're trying to show you that we do care and that we do have a wealth of knowledge and that we're more than just, a guy that can teach you how to swing or how to play or how to putt, but we really want to kind of improve your game, right? And I think that goes back to branding is that we want to have a brand that when people look at us, they want to say, "Hey, I want you to go to my instructor," not just
I think the
some guy off the
term,
internet.
yeah, the term that I've kind of gotten now, I've heard it a lot because I've been doing a lot of continuing education points, so videos through the PGA, and PGA Coach is such a good resource for our students to try to access us. I think you use PGA Coach pretty well, don't you?
Yeah, I use it a lot. I love it.
So it's the relationships, right? That's what we're trying to build. We're trying to build relationships. We don't want to be a one-time instructor. We don't want to be a, let me fix you on this particular day. We need, and it's not all monetarily driven, but it is obviously like, hey, if I can build a relationship with you, if I can really change you from a 20 handicap golfer to a 15 handicap golfer in a season, that's going to take a couple of sessions, multiple sessions going on the golf course, playing, evaluating your golf game, because what you think is the bad part of your game and what I watch when I see you play, oftentimes two different things.
Correct.
Like going to the doctor and saying, hey, I've got sciatic nerve pain in my back. Oh, you're a golf pro. How would you know? Like, why wouldn't you let the doctor evaluate you and tell you what you have but we do it the opposite, right? In our world, we're like, so what's going on with your game? What do you want to work on? Ah, I want to get more consistent. Well, does that really improve your golf? Like, does that really make your golf game? You're telling us what's wrong rather than us, hey, let us evaluate it and let me tell you what I think you should work on.
Every student I think I get has already given themselves a self-diagnosis of what's wrong, and they're going to give you, here's what I need to fix, and you look at it and you're
That's
like,
it.
I think you bring a great point. They'll be like, "Well, I want to get more consistent and strike the ball better," and I'm like, "Well, how many balls did you lose in a round?" "I didn't lose any." And I'm like, "Well, how many putts did we have?" "Well, we had like 35 putts." And I'm thinking, why are we here on the track, man, trying to pound balls? We need to be on the putting green working on our stroke. But, people, as people do, we self-diagnose and we kind of look at things the way we want to look at them and not the way that a professional would look at them.
No, so it was just, a little side note. We always go down that side note, but we just get kind of shows you how important it is, because we seem to all of our conversations do end up leading to that. Like, be open-minded, and I'll say this about the Faxon thing. That was really good, and kind of in a club fitting world, because they kind of mentioned some club fitting. The guy, Aaron, the tour representative, was like, the best way for me to get you fit for golf clubs is for me to put stuff in your hand, you not know what it is on the bottom of it, and let me just have you see, and you hit shots, and you're going to know, Faxon's going to know within two or three shots. Might take us four or five, but they definitely mentioned that, like, go to a wedge fitting, go to a store, you'll see the numbers, you'll feel it, ideally probably wedges are probably best fit outside, but you're going to get fit, and who cares what's on the bottom of the club?
Yeah,
Nobody's paying you.
correct.
Get it,
Correct.
Get it. I don't care if it's Sean and Tim's wedge game. Who cares? Like, get the thing in your hands, the feel, the weight, the shaft, the head, the grind, the bounce, all of it. See how it comes out. And you may not like the lower ball flight. You might be a little higher ball flight guy. Great. Then go to a 56-degree wedge instead of a 54-degree wedge. It doesn't matter. The ball doesn't care. The score doesn't matter. Do what is going to get that ball in the hole as quick as possible. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
and
it
that
was.
brings me back to an old podcast that we did with Sean Van Patten. So if any of our listeners are listening about club fitting, he did a great job about that. But you bring up a great point about, you know, the weight of the club. You know, I remember Sean talking about that. A lot of our students don't pay attention to what the overall weight of the club is. They just kind of grab it off the thing. And, you know, all my buddies swings a, you know, a 95 gram or 120 gram shaft, so it's good for me. You know, I think that's
Right.
great about a wedge fitting is that you not only learned about the bounce, the head and all that, but you also start learning about what your shaft weight should be, the flex.
Yep.
It's just so in depth, right? And
it
it's
is. It
just
is.
a part of the game that you got to be so good at, right? I mean, you know, when you look at guys that win the U.S. Open, like Bryson DeChambeau, what was the shot that he hit? That great wedge shot.
Bunker shot, absolutely.
Bunker shot. You know, it's a wedge shot, you know, that wins tournaments. So
no question. So that was an amazing 2 hours, let alone, you know, so we'll just kind of move on so we don't make this a 4 hour podcast, but so, you know, we could talk about that for a while. But Wednesday, Thursday was going to the PGA show itself. It's at the Orange County Convention Center. It's a mile long, you know, mile long building. You've been there multiple times, you've seen the festivities, the kind of energy that's created on Wednesday, the opening bell, we'll call it, and there's so many people there on Wednesday. Thursday was more was less, but it's just the energy on Wednesday is really outstanding. And again, kind of T-Mac, this is a weird thing to say to you because you mean you've known each other a long time. I went to the PGA golf show on Wednesday and Thursday, and I hit one putter, and I did not see another golf club the entire time.
Really?
They were there. It's just this version of the show for myself and my head professional. We were looking for specific certain items that are going to come back into the shop. We're going to sell better. We're looking for tournament gifts. We're looking for odd different things that we can bring into the shop that might be something different that the
Yeah,
our
unique
normal
little
member
gifts
has not seen.
for customers, right?
So we had a couple of meetings set up. We had I think we saw about 55 vendors on Wednesday, and we made a list, and you start from, you know, the left side of the building and you go to the right, and the next day we started on the right side of the building and went to the left, and six different head cover companies, T-Mac, six different head cover companies. Like, you know, but there's like different price points that you can go in head covers. Our normal retail head cover is around $49 for one club for the driver or whatever. And then we saw that we could actually have three price points for head covers. You could have a $49 one, you could have a $75 one, and you could have a $110 one, which sounds super expensive, and it is.
People
But
pay it now.
the customization, well, the customization, think about what people are doing with their drivers, making them different colors. You know, think about how your car is built now. Like, there's so much customization in the world that to get a $100 head cover that says Ross on it on the front, and it's got a portrait of Donald Ross, and you can put, you know, 1898 in a leather grain, smells like, feels like, inside is beautiful. Like, I know it's a head cover. I know I'm getting excited about a head cover, but it's just there's cool products out there that you would never be able to see on Amazon.com or whatever, you know?
Well, I'd like to touch on that just a little bit because I would like to say that I'm a little bit of a head cover freak. Okay. So I like buying, you know, unique and exotic head covers. I've got some pretty colorful, head covers in my bag. And you know,
Interesting.
I love the uniqueness of it. You know, when my bag's in a row, I know what bag's mine. And I kind of like it when people go, "Hey, man, that's a cool head cover." You know, there's something about it. You're like, "Hey, I've got something that's kind of cool. I've got something that's unique." Or somebody's like, "Hey, I've never seen that before." You like that. You want to stand out. You know, we're individuals, and golf has been such a, you know, everything's the same for so long.
Boring,
everybody's
right,
boring.
Yeah.
It's plaid colors.
Yep.
It's all this.
Yep.
So now to
yep.
have this customization, like you're talking about with your club or your company or your logo, I think it's just great. And to be honest with you, I love all the unique colors that are coming out in the head covers. And yeah, I'm a little bit of a hug cover freak.
That's good. See, I learned more about you today.
Yeah, there you go.
But I mean, people with Scotty Cameron putters, they will go buy those putter, those head covers are whatever, multiple, you know, $200, $300
as much as the putter.
Yep. Cause it's unique and different and one of a kind, whatever. So, yeah, you multiply the head cover conversation we just had versus with, just so many different things, bag tags for your golf bag, junior clothing. We went to like three different junior clothing because we have a lot of juniors and a lot of kids are starting to get into it.
That's a big industry too. That's blown up in the last decade, hasn't
it?
I mean, most of the time it's just like, hey, little junior's going to wear whatever he wants, you know, a collared shirt that's hotter than heck and some, you know, so it's, and the training aids they have for kids now too is amazing too.
Yep. No, it's, I did actually walk by Snag Golf. You know what Snag Golf is?
Yes.
Yep. So that was good. So Snag Golf is essentially their target audience is between 3 years old up to 12 years old, I think is what the number was.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of a fun, you know, colorful, big club. The club head's huge.
Yeah.
The ball is kind of like a, almost like a tennis ball feel, kind of a Nerf ball thing that you can chip and, you know, I mean, colorful, first of all, face awareness. It sounds silly, but it's not. I think I should get a couple of those clubs for the adult people that we teach.
Absolutely.
To understand what the rotation of the club face is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, but again, just like you wouldn't just normally see that in a normal store. So that was good. I did see probably one of my favorite items I saw was, you know, little tech gadget guy with the simulator and all they call that. I think we might have seen something like this about a year ago, but basically it was a insole that you put into your shoes.
Huh.
And then it connects through Bluetooth to your phone. And as you take the video of your swing, it's going to show you the pressure mapping of how your footwork is happening throughout the swing.
That's big.
I mean, amazing, T-Max. So much fun to kind of watch. And they had like a tour player on there. So how the pressure shifts from front to left to right, on the backswing as you start your downswing, as you get to impact, after impact, and it's measuring it in the percentages of your weight on your left or right foot at these different positions. So kind of one of the more glaring things that I'm like, I kind of knew, and we've talked about it before too,
mm-hmm.
but you didn't really see it. So I think it was Matt Fitzpatrick. I could be wrong with that. Who was the pro that was they were using as the kind of model for this insole? Bottom line is, again, kind of big picture thing for our listeners. At impact with his driver, he had 0% of his body weight on his front leg. Zero.
Wow.
His left foot, right-handed golfer. His left foot was essentially not connected to the ground or there was no pressure on his left foot at impact with a driver. I want to say that a couple more times to make sure people get that.
Wow.
That's right. Like, you know, traditionally you're taught to, okay, shift your weight from your front or back leg to your front leg to make sure you get to a good finish.
Yeah.
But, you know, at impact, 0%. Now, as he gets the club past impact,
mm-hmm.
it starts to shift back a little bit to his left side. And then at the top of his follow through, he's back to probably kind of like that 96% of his weight on his left side and 4% of his weight on his right side.
Wow.
So I think I'm excited to kind of put that into action. I was literally at the gym this morning, working on that a little bit in my head. And I'm like, okay, well, that, you know, what I saw there on that 3D image was like, oh my gosh, he's got 0% of his weight on his front leg. So,
That's pretty mind-blowing, to be honest. As an instructor, we're definitely taught, hey, we need to get that weight onto that left side to start us going. But that's that, you know, but there again, we're getting into new technology that's just unraveling a lot of mysteries that we've had as instructors for decades, right? I mean, TrackMan has definitely helped us and helped our students significantly.
Yeah, that's correct. And yeah, I mean they had it on there for putting, like showing you your pressure mapping and putting, which you
Oh.
wouldn't think would be that big of a thing. But you know, I'm like, oh, I watched the LPGA girl who was doing that. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting take on it. Yeah, so
What was the
just
name of this product? Did you remember what the name of it was?
well, so I think I have that. It was, I don't know if I have it top of my head. I can maybe we can share that with our listeners. I scrolled through again. We when you go there, you do the QR codes of these companies. So I probably have about 90 in my phone.
We'll put a
But
link in the descriptions below for our listeners when we're done.
yeah, it was. I do know that the I'm going to say the retail price on the one if you got an insole for yourself would be $600. So. Pretty expensive, pretty healthy.
It's
And
$600.
I'm
Now, is there an annual subscription that came with that? Do you know?
no, it's square. But the caveat for us as PGA professionals is you could buy four of them, so different sizes, because they do have some different size shoes.
Oh, it's $600 a pop, yeah.
They're $1,300.
Oh.
And now you come back to the business side of it. Okay, now how do I monetize that? How do I actually
Correct.
make that? Now I give you a lesson, right? And then you leave, and I got 5 minutes before my next lesson. Now I got a. To me, I kind of picture like the bowling alley. Like I've got to clean that, sanitize it, get it ready for the next gentleman or next lady coming in. So there was a little bit of some stuff in there. Like you may not have figured this all out just yet. But again, just from the technological side, very cool product. Very excited,
Well,
different.
I
Good
think
to
you
see.
also bring up a really good point when you have clients and they go, "Well, can I get that lesson for a little cheaper? Do you do a better deal?" And I'm thinking, as much as we put out for equipment and do all this stuff, there is some back cost for it. So, that it justifies why we charge. It's just not because we want
Well,
to overprice or anything like that. We've got a lot of equipment that we've invested in.
yeah, TrackMan's 20 grand, period. You
Yeah.
know,
I think it's 30
TrackMan's.
grand, isn't it now?
No, it's well, it could be, but I think it's, it's somewhere between 20 and 30. And, yeah, we could go into that little world, but,
Yeah.
we did. It took us, cost us $8,000 to become a PGA member. You know, there's some time and effort into what we do, so we
Absolutely.
easily and yeah, I, yeah. I just don't let me go down that road. Let's stick to
So
the.
let's move on to apparel because I know apparel's a big part of what you like to do. You're a big person for apparel with merchandise. Did you see anything as far as like winter gear or summer gear or rain gear that might be coming out that might be really cool for our listeners or anything like that? Any new apparel?
I think I mean first thing is different shopping for Massachusetts than shopping for Florida,
Right.
right? That's a different thing. So we're kind of looking for what you just said, kind of that outerwear. You're looking for pieces that are somewhat reasonable in that probably $100 to $150 range, which at Silverado was not even an option to pick, really have a purchase. So you look for. So I guess what you look for, kind of the same thing I said about head covers, right? You kind of look for maybe your three different price points. Okay, we're going to have a shirt in there for $69.99. You're going to have a shirt in there for $89.99. You're going to have a shirt in there for $109.99, that type of thing. And then you multiply that too. So to me, the answer to maybe your question is Johnny O is one of our favorite brands up here.
Nice company. Yep.
When Coach York sent you a shirt, was that a Johnny O? Do you remember?
Yes, sir. It was a
Okay.
Johnny O.
Yeah.
It's a
Yeah.
beautiful
So it's just
shirt.
one of beautiful shirt. Yeah. So the texture, the materials, the kind of feels of these things is just so much elevated compared to what we used to kind of hit or play with. I think there's Sun Mountain or Sun Ice actually. Sun Ice was a nice brand. It's kind of like a more of a outerwear piece. Because you still want it breathable, you still want it kind of like lighter weight so you can play and swing and not have to move so much. I think in the Florida world, we definitely went by the company. I can't remember the exact name of it, but they are supposed to be the providers to the LPGA for the shirt sleeves,
Didn't we do
the
Monterey
sun
Bay?
protection. No. Well, Monterey Bay is one, but this is the one where you put the shirt sleeves on to kind of protect your sun, your screen, your
Oh yeah, the
Arms.
sunscreen shirts or
Yeah.
something like that. Yes,
Yeah.
yes.
Yep. So that's one in Florida world that makes sense. that you probably want to kind of keep your eye on. So we, Byron Nelson, some of these companies have like four or five different under the same umbrella, which was like the Byron Nelson Divets, Munsingware. They're all under the same umbrella, but we probably. We've got a new buyer coming in to honor our staff. Her name is Alyssa. She's going to be kind of doing more of that world. So we didn't specifically, kind of set up apparel meetings, but there's just a lot of different product. And again, you've been there. Like you walk down some of these aisles, and you're like, how is this little company in this little 10 by 10 space going to make it work versus, Ahead or Apuka or Branded Bills or Imperial? Like those are four hat companies that are bigger companies. And how is this little one that's in the back by the bathrooms going to make it with some? But we've also found some of those deals even back at Silverado where they were, honestly, the cost was like 250, 350, and we're selling them for $15. And they're for some of our clientele, they're equally as good. So it doesn't,
Yeah, they've got their own unique little clientele that they serve to, and they serve to them very well. I think
That's it.
you don't need the whole world to buy your product, but you just need a small minority to really be dedicated to your company or to your product, and you can survive. Maybe not thrive, but you can survive, right?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that was, I'm trying to think of anything else that I saw that was really,
Well, could you touch a little bit on the camaraderie, right? I mean, the big thing about it is when we go there, who are some of the people that we meet, some of the things that we kind of do. I mean, at least for me, every time I go there, I get supercharged up to be a PGA member. You know what I mean? You're just like, I'm ready to go face the world. I'm excited. I've gone to meetings or seen Brad Faxon or, tested out the new toys or seen the new apparel. And, it's just like a renewal for the year, right? You're like, this will get me through the year. I'm charged up. I'm ready to go. And you just get, for me, you get all these great mental conversations with people. And it just, for me, you walk away smarter, you walk away more intelligent, and you know that you've got something more to give to your clients and to your community.
Yeah, no question. No question. It's, I mean, the PGA is sometimes we downplay it on this podcast, but sometimes it's because of our, frustration with some of the things they do. They're trying. Oh, I'm going to use that word. They're trying. The PGA in America is trying. They've set up a lot of different programs for us as PGA professionals. They also want to set up their goal is to make, to improve the game, to make the game better. That's part of our goal is to grow the game really as the PGA professional. So I think having this conversation here, I'm glad we're doing this today. I think this is a great idea to kind of get the fresh, vibes of that show. Running into your, like I said, running into people that I hadn't seen in a year, and just and we're all in the same boat. Like we all understand the same hardships, difficulties, but also great things and relationships that we have with our membership and the lifelong, relationships we have with people. Side note. Mr. Etheridge at Silverado Golf and Country Club, Ray Etheridge, one of our great, great members. And I've known Ray since I was like 1997. He was 90 years old. His wife called me, unfortunately passed away from some complications this week. But like, I think that's an important thing to talk about, T-Mac, because that's the relationship building, the lifelong friends of that we end up creating in our business.
Absolutely.
Whether it's a member or a fellow PGA professional or a cart kid that might come back to you 10 years later and say, hey, T-Mac, thanks for being there for me. You're a really good role model. I really appreciate you guiding me through my little difficult adult or, teenage years. So yeah, we're humble too, right? I think that's another commonality typically of PGA
We're
professionals.
humble, but the other thing is that what golf provides for us is a home or a family away from a family, right? I mean, people like Ray Etheridge, that I've known for a number of years, and his wife Pat, great people. I can remember that, he wouldn't just want to talk to me about golf or, hey, can I get a tip or anything like this. It was more about how's your daughter doing? How's your wife doing?
Absolutely.
It could be a random conversation that had nothing to do with golf, but you enjoyed and you appreciated those conversations, especially coming from somebody who was well into their 90s, Getting a fresh perspective of what time was like then, their perspective. It might not be the same as yours, but you got to respect it and you got to enjoy it.
No, it's so true. So it's just a great meeting place for us as, PGA professionals to get to. There's a lot of education available during that week. And even if you don't make it to the actual week or to the show, there's online education. I've said this for many years. I really still, as I go to it every year, I don't know why. Me and you've talked about this a little bit. I don't know why they don't open up Friday or Saturday to the public, charge $10 a pit pop, let the public be able to get to that, have that money that's generated on that day go specifically to junior golf.
Or
I don't get
whatever you want to kind of do. Yeah,
it.
make up a prize pool. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, if I was the PGA commissioner or whatever for a day, that'd be one of those things I would absolutely. It doesn't make any sense to keep it insular. Like, well, why wouldn't we share this with everybody and get the people? I know the Golf Channel's there and they kind of do their deal and stuff, and they do, and it would just be so different to add that excitement and let everybody hear and talk about what I'm talking about, because it's great. The game is great. We play it for a reason. We put so much time into it. You're 100% right. We, fortunately, unfortunately, we spend more time at our job than we do with our family a lot of times. And so we're gonna, yeah. So it was a great experience. I can't, like I thought, I'd like to say, I'd like to encourage everybody to go, but you can't. So best we can do is kind of share our experiences with it and, keep bringing the information to the public and let them know what's going on.
I mean, I agree with you. I wish they would open that up to the public. I think I think if the public kind of saw what's all behind the scenes a little bit, one, they get a little bit more appreciation. Two, they would get a little bit more knowledge too. I mean, it just seems like the PGA show, it just seems to me, if I was a public guy, it's like they're trying to hide something from me. They're just trying to hold me back from something. So I think you just open up the doors, you just be a little bit more transparent on a Friday or maybe start it at noon on Thursday or something like that. And let the public come on in and I think the big thing is for the vendors is answer the questions from them too, not just from the
We've
professionals
seen
that,
that. Yeah, we've seen that.
they have concerns, they have questions, and I think that would be, apropos for them to come in and say, "Hey, I'd like to see this in my club," or "I'd like to see this color," or something like that. And I think that just opens it up for everybody.
So true. It is, yeah. So, no, great experience. Fun. I think we got to start kind of working our way towards having some interaction with our people that are listening to, be able to ask us questions about what they want to know. But get in contact with yourself at Silverado at I guess not Silverado, unfortunately, currently. But at Swing Theory Golf, and get in touch with myself at Oakley Country Club or, through my Instagram account, One Stop Golf Shop, is still my Instagram account. So whatever that is, if you guys have questions or conversations, or just let us know, because we, if we're not covering the right thing, if you guys want to have a topic of a different, something else that you'd like to know about, let us know. We'd love to, because we can cover a lot.
Whatever it may be, from course management to wedges, putters, drivers, anything it may be, maybe even the how to hit a bunker shot, whatever it may be. So let us know. We're here to provide good content for you. I thought today's session about the PGA show was great. We got to learn quite a bit. I think the idea of Brad Faxon, you seeing Brad Faxon is just great. I can't wait to see the video and upload it to our YouTube channel. But that's good stuff right there. And Stacy
I want to
Lewis.
leave with one. Yeah, it was amazing. I want to leave with one thing, T-Mac, because I was going to mention it when I was talking about facts, and I thought we were talking about them too much. But it's again kind of like an insider's view into watching a tour player hit a golf shot. So, best kind of simplest way to explain this for the listener: when he's hitting a 58-degree club and he's got that lob wedge, and he hit took like four or five practicing before he even did it. My best advice to the player who is trying to hit a 58-degree club or 60-degree: it is amazing how open the club face is, and on the takeaway, and on the top of his backswing, how open that club face is at the t at, throughout the swing. So whatever if you, I'm not trying to talk down. If you understand that, if you know what that means, it's something that you should try to do more often. And don't be scared of it. His other thing with lob wedges was he said this. He said, he goes, tour players that I work with, tour players that I played with, they like to have their club head moving really fast. He said the word send it. He's like, they like to ha feel like the club head is being sent from the top of the backswing, and there's some speed in that 58 degree wedge shot. And I think that's to us, if we kind of maybe simplify it to bunker shots, people stop in bunkers. They just stop the club. They don't keep it going. And it does kind of get stuck in the ground, or the weight's going to the back leg and they kind of bottom out early. The overall point for the listener is like, open the club face, keep it open on the backswing, figure out how to do that, and then get some speed in that delivery position to get some spin on the golf ball. And don't be afraid of blading it, because as long as you make good contact, you're going to be fine. I know that's a little simple, but just really it was something he touched on. I'm like, it, just when you watch him, you're like, oh my gosh, that blade's so open. That blade is so open.
That's a great mental perspective for our listeners, right? I mean, I'm sure a lot of them are trying to keep the face square, I'm sure a lot of them are trying, and they get that shovel, they're just shoveling it into the ground with that leading edge. So that's definitely the tip of the day. If you're struggling with those wedges, don't be afraid to really open that thing up. Open it up to the point where it's kind of uncomfortable, wouldn't you agree? And then just make shots. Just try to hit the ground and I guarantee you they're going to walk away after a couple of things going, what? How does this work? Right? They're going to be like, this is amazing. This shouldn't work, but it does, right? So, but yeah, that's a great tip.
do it out of long grass too, right? Start in long grass. Don't just start on the side of the fringe. Start in long grass, start in something you feel a little more comfortable doing, but you'll kind of start seeing. That's why I didn't mention that, but in the Cleveland world, and other companies have, but they get these full face wedges, and that's part of the reason they've got full face, where the grooves are all the way in the total part of the club, because when you're hitting in different conditions, you want to be able to make sure you can literally line it up off the toe like you would a putter. And if you wanted to put extra spin on it, and that's what the Cleveland guys are saying, and you do it and you're like, oh my gosh, it is more spin. Really cool.
Well,
So,
you're
you know,
utilizing the
practice
whole face, right? I mean, at that
it.
point, you're utilizing the whole face and not just that little corner edge just not doing anything for you. So I think
That's
it's
it.
great.
That's it. Yeah. Good
So,
stuff.
well, thank you, Dynamic Golf listeners. We certainly appreciate it. If you found this, podcast interesting or liked it, please think about liking or subscribing to the channel. I am your host, Tim McElvanna, and with me is Sean Klotz. Sean, anything before we break?
No, I think that was good. That's a good session for some people to listen to. And just keep at it, have a good time with it, and keep looking, keep getting yourself educated. Keep going.
Sounds good. So, once again, thank you, Dynamic Golf listeners, and we will see you on the next video. See ya.